What's up, everybody? This week's episode of the 90s podcast is rated E for explicit. It contains themes like sex, underage drinking, etc. that are not suitable for a young audience. And to be honest, if you're under 18, we really don't want you listening to this one. So if you're under 18 or you're a parent with a kid who's under 18 listening with you, we strongly recommend not listening any further because this episode is not designed for them, okay? Thank you very much, everybody. Have a good day. What's up, everybody? This week I'm joined by Greg Gregory to talk about a movie that launched a million pornographic websites, American Pie. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s podcast. Welcome to the show. All right, what's up, everybody? Well, I have not said those words in a long time, and I think it's about time they got said. What do you think, man?
Yeah, man, absolutely. I've been definitely looking forward to coming back and recording, you know, and talking about 90s stuff, because that's just kind of my thing. So, yeah, it's awesome to be back.
It is awesome to be back. Apologies for everybody who waited all last year for something, but oh, well, okay. It can't be helped. Happy New Year, by the way. Welcome to 2022.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been fantastic. The weather is, insert weather channel prediction here. in case you haven't guessed, we're recording this a little bit while back. It is still 2021. We haven't had Christmas yet. But don't worry. That's none of your concern of whether or not we're going to have Christmas this year, especially my British listeners.
Right.
Apparently they shut the country down again. So,
oh, wow.
All well and good. How are you, brother?
Not too bad. Just, you know, been working a whole bunch and traveling. There's a lot more of that coming. But, yeah, man, it's just been either bass or audio or graphics or a combination of the two. So, yeah, just been really busy.
You're like a man with eight hands.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I could use 10.
You have fingers in many different pies. Hopefully not this one, but many different other ones.
Right. Well, I'm always happy to come on and talk anything 90s any chance I get. So I appreciate you having me on.
Not a problem. Now, I want to give a disclaimer before anybody wonders why we're heading out the gate with an explicit episode, because I don't do them that often. And there's, you know, you want to start off the season on the right foot and everything like that. I thought this would be the best episode I've got planned to open it, right? And then I realized you can't talk about anything in this thing in a PG PC kind of way.
You really can't. You won't do it justice. You can't neuter this if you're going to give it a true review. Yeah. So I thought we would wait till the disclaimer before we, you know, started dropping F bombs left and right or something. But you know.
But the one thing I love about this movie is the fact that it's not sanitized. One thing I hate about this movie is the fact that, well, there's a lot of things that wouldn't go well these days.
Yeah, I mean, it was edgy, definitely. But it's just so interesting seeing it through the modern lens. And I can't wait to talk more about that. Yeah, there's so many little things in there that are very indicative of that space and time in a lot of ways.
Well, let's just dive right into it, right? We're talking about the great American Pie. Okay. Now, if you haven't seen American Pie, stop what you're doing. Hit pause. Go watch it. It's on streaming services. I think it's on Paramount, if I'm not mistaken.
Is it? Yeah, I saw it. I rented it on Prime. It was like $3. So, I mean, there's a way to watch it one way or another.
Go watch it if you haven't watched it. If you have watched it, you know, you're not going to forget it, because it's one of those movies that you don't forget. You know, especially if you've watched things like Porky's or, you know, stuff like that. And that was the inspiration for this movie. See, what it was, let's get all the nerdy stuff out the way. Right? It was directed by Paul Weitz, produced by Chris Weitz. So the Weitz brothers were all over it, as well as Adam Hertz wrote the thing. He wrote it when he moved out to Hollywood, right? The writer moved out to Hollywood, and he wanted to get his foot in the door, so he wrote what they call a spec script. Now, you know, what spec script, for those who don't know, is it's basically fan fiction. It's just something you sit down and write, knock out for fun. Maybe you sell it on for a couple of $100. Maybe you sell it for a couple of $1,000. You know,
right.
Nothing major. And he
that'd be like the equivalent of a musician writing a jingle really quick and selling it, kind of like that.
Pretty much. It's nothing. Nothing major is going to happen from it, except get your name out there for when something bigger.
Yeah, it gets your name out there, gets you a little bit of coin, gets you some exposure. Oh, the dreaded exposure word.
but you get paid for this exposure.
No, yeah. Well, I mean, but if you're getting all those other things and you get exposure, now you're talking.
Well, he wrote this script called Untitled Teenage Sex Comedy that can be made for under $10 million that most readers will probably hate, but I think you will love. Which
it's a little on wordy. The nose. It's a tad wordy, though, just a little bit. But and he was, you know, looking at the numbers, he was pretty much spot on for that. Wow.
Absolutely. I mean, he nailed it.
Did he watch a lot of Naked Gun movies or something? That's sort of like, Looney Tunes, Duck Dodgers in the 24th and a half century, like something just really,
I used to think, oh, he was a starving writer, but then he wrote it on a skiing trip. And my experience is you have to have a few bucks in the pocket to go skiing.
You
know,
you do.
Your bank account has to end in zero, not begin with zero.
Porky's is a big one. And that, you know, I never really thought about that too much, but yeah, that's another one of those movies that's just like a time capsule of the era, a classic in its own right. And parallels this movie in a lot of ways, because there are some scenes now like in that. There's wow.
Yep. Like,
they got away with that. The one where he stuck his dick through the, tried to stick his dick through the hole in the wall. And,
yep.
Oh my God.
Glory hole scene, man.
It's crazy.
What's for dinner? I mean, you know, that's the thing. You make these movies in the 80s and the 90s and you'll say, oh, well, people don't care. What people don't realize is, right, and we give a lot of people a lot of credit, a lot of stick for this. In the 80s, these films were made for boomers.
Yeah.
In the 90s, they were made for Gen X. And we are, of course, proudly in the millennial fortitude. I think you're on the cusp of both.
Yeah, I'm actually considered an Xennial. So I've heard, because I'm like right in between Gen X and millennial.
Yep.
But in reality, though, I consider myself a pure millennial, because I was 18 in 2000.
There you go. I was,
you know what I mean? To me, yeah, I was 2001. So, but February of 2001. So within 2 months. Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
I mean, we say 90s, but we go from like mid 1989 to mid 2001, because, you know,
there's some overlap.
There's a lot of overlap in there. Of course, we try and be as pure as possible, but, you know, nothing pure is these days.
Nah, it's never going to be totally pure. But, I mean, you can just do your best, you know.
But, I mean, we talk about Porky's. You watch Porky's in Bachelor Party, too.
I don't think I've ever seen that one, actually.
No. I mean, it's probably the same thing. High school kids want to get laid.
One thing about 80s movies, with exception to Porky's, but a lot of them were really good about, like, telling you what the entire movie was going to be in the title.
Yeah.
Because you see Bachelor Party, it's like, boom, you know, Edward Scissorhands, boom, guy with scissors for a hand. You know what I mean? Yeah. Jurassic Park. I mean, it was just like, boom, you knew exactly what was going to happen. So that was one thing they had going.
Well, that's the thing. They didn't take that advice when they did Sausage Party a couple of years ago. Because a lot of kids went to see that movie and walked out after the first 15 minutes when they realized what the parents realized what they were actually watching.
because it's not about sausage connoisseurs.
Yes, because, you know, it's let's ignore those pesky ratings.
Right.
Rated R movie is you don't take your kids to a rated R movie. Anyway, one. What's that movie? Inside Out by Pixar.
Yeah.
Apparently, one was corrupted, and like it's the first 5 minutes was Inside Out. Because they do everything digitally now. They don't do it with a real film anymore. The first 5 minutes Inside Out, and then like it's spliced in pieces of Insidious in between.
Oh, no. Oops.
So going back to this.
Yes, sir.
Basically, the movie was based on Adam Hertz's experiences in high school. The movie, the school that they used in the movie, they actually replicate. It was his high school. So all the Michigan stuff, it's his, was alma mater is it called? I don't know the right way to say it. Yeah, that's his school. So they replicated his school, even down to the colors, and like you know the restaurant that the guys hang out in, that was something that he did all the time with all of his buddies. So, you know, this script got picked up by Chris and Paul Weitz, who made About a Boy, Down to Earth, and Ants. Chris also did Rogue One, Star Wars, which if you've not watched is a fantastic movie. I love it.
So they say, yeah, I haven't seen it, but I've heard good stuff.
Paul did In Good Company. Now I've not seen that one.
Neither have I actually. But it's by otherwise though, that's a pretty good resume right there.
Very diverse too.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. There's, you got an animated, you got, you know, action, adventure, sci-fi, you know, et cetera. Yeah, totally.
British Christmas Story.
Yeah. Gotta have that.
Actually, About a Boy is a really good movie. If you haven't seen it, go ahead. It's one of Hugh Grant's finest performances.
Oh, okay. The one in the backseat of that car.
Right.
Jeez. That totally, I feel bad for him, man. I should make fun of the guy. Totally killed his career, man. Poor guy.
Well, he was dating Liz Hurley at the time.
I know. And,
you give up for Liz Hurley? No.
I know. What?
That
is not meeting your needs well, sir. I'm so sorry for you.
In the words of George Carlin, drop some of your needs.
Yeah, right? Lower. Yeah. I mean, geez. Oh, he lost. He really did lose it all. Poor guy.
He came back, though, somewhat. I mean, I reckon he would have made a good offer of Powers.
I think time heals all wounds in some respects. I think you can come back from certain things. There's certain things you can't come back from, but I think in his case, that was like, it was 30 years ago.
I mean, if Mel Gibson and Mark Wahlberg can make comebacks after what they've gotten away with.
Oh my, I'm telling you, man. Yeah. I was talking to someone about it, and they were like, what?
why do you dig up Mark Wahlberg all the time? Because he racially assaulted two people and left one of them blind.
Oh wow, I knew about the other. Jeez,
boohoo, he can't get a liquor license because he's a convicted felon. He should be in prison. Never mind making movies and Marky Mark of the Funky Bunch with Z-Pack and you know.
Wow. Got it. Jeez.
Yeah. It is what it is.
Anyway. Well, you know, speaking of possibly ruining your life, we might have be peeling back that onion a little bit on this movie too. It's crash and burn stars on here.
Oh yeah.
Mainly I was happy to see the rookie of the year guy again. His name is escaping me right now. But anyways, yeah, man, this is,
well, you know, this movie, we tie that in, right? This movie has Tara Reid in it. So I mean,
yeah,
her career.
Yeah. It kind of did. I feel for her a little bit. I do too. I know people that have struggled with different types of substance abuses, and you know, I've had close friends, family members, and stuff who've dealt with it one way or another. But
the pressure cooker Hollywood, man.
That's what I was about to say too. Part of it's the lifestyle and just the people that you're around and the environment, you know. So, but I'm just glad she's still around and that she appears to look healthy and is acting again. So that's great.
Well, you know, she was hyped up as one of the future stars, right? Because the cast was made up of relative unknowns, right? So you had,
it really was. You know, I didn't really think much about that. But in retrospect, I mean, it was, they were taking a risk of a lot of them.
Yeah. I mean, Shannon Elizabeth, Tara Reid, Chris Klein, and Natasha Lyonne were the ones that everybody was watching. They would be the next big breakout stars. And it wasn't them when you look back at it. There you go. it wasn't them when you look back at it. You look back at it and you think it was Jason Biggs who surprisingly made a career out of this.
He
Chris Klein did too.
I think him, Biggs, and also Sean William Scott. Man, yeah. He's done a bunch. He tried really. I mean, Hollywood kept trying so hard to de-typecast him, but he's just one of those dudes. When I look at him, I'm like, Stifler. You're a Stifler, man. Like that's you're always going to be Stifler.
I think the dude wears my car didn't help either. The typecasting.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think so, but I think he played that perfectly.
Yeah,
I think it was another branch off of that same limb. If that makes sense. Stifler, but he was synergized. You know, like getting energy from Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah,
you know,
and he managed to have a good career for himself outside of that 70s
absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely.
Another guy who some of the guys that you might have heard of, Allison Hannigan and Jason Biggs had TV backgrounds.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I know.
I didn't know that either until I started researching this either. Yeah.
I know Buffy. I mean, I guess they had to start somewhere. I know Buffy was just before this. So I know she was on.
Yes.
Had the Buffy stuff. And you had Eugene Levy, who nobody knew in America. Apparently he was like sketch comedy. He was the Drew Carey of Canada.
Yeah, he's legendary in our hat up north, man, big time. And I think I think it was a really good idea, like just the way that he played that role. I think that he was just absolutely perfect. I was gonna say he actually had notes that actually made the character, but so I'll let you.
Well, he ad-libbed most of the stuff that he gave, because in the original draft, Jim's dad was the typical hard-ass, you know, dad.
Red Foreman type.
Yeah. And he said, no, this would work better if he was just as awkward and clumsy as his dad was.
Well, yeah, because that's his kid. Yeah. So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right?
Do you know who they were going to get to? Do you know who the first choice was?
Hit me.
Bill Murray. There goes your $10 million right there.
At that time, he Groundhog Day, and he'd done Kingpin. some really, really big stuff. That might have worked, but I think Eugene Levy, man, I think his scenes are just so good.
You cringe.
He's trying so hard. I mean, he's trying so hard to be, like, you know, sensitive and understanding and helpful, but he just the look on his kid's face. He's just like, oh my God, kill me now.
Do you know what a clitoris is?
Like they're it's the blind leading the blind almost. It's like this guy has never done anything either.
The correct response to that is no, dad, do you?
It's right. It's just absolutely crazy to me that it was a largely unknown cast. I mean, they just got a bunch of good looking people and made a movie, you know, for the most part. There's some familiarity there, but I think that they knew that they had a good plot and they had good plot devices and other things to work with. So as long as they had actors that worked well together,
they all had chemistry.
Exactly. I think that's what made it work. So obviously they did thorough screen testing and casting and stuff like that. So,
but even then there's chemistry issues sometimes, you know. These guys nailed the chemistry straight away. I don't know whether it was a shared background of being, you know,
similar. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the thing too, where I've said this in a lot of ways before. I like watching films with unknown actors because, you know, it's hard when you watch, I'm not gonna make the Rich Hall joke about Tom Cruise movies, but it's hard when you're watching a Tom Cruise movie to see anything other than Tom Cruise on the screen.
Yeah.
You're not seeing his character, you're seeing Tom Cruise. Whereas with these guys, I didn't see Jason Biggs, I saw Jim Levinson, you know?
Sure.
You saw the characters because you didn't know if this guy was going to, you know, this guy was that guy off the screen or whatever. It's, you know, they're unknown. And because they're unknown, you invested in them a heck of a lot more.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think it was a good, It was a defining role for a lot of them. Like, some more than others.
Yeah.
I think probably Shannon Elizabeth,
yeah.
Jason Biggs, and Michelle Flaherty.
Yep.
Because I know for a fact that there's still people that walk up to Michelle Flaherty and go, "And now I'm time at Bandcamp."
Yep.
Like, I know people still do that to her. Also, I know that Jason Biggs gets called pie fucker all the time. he's confirmed that in interviews and in a movie. He actually has a rant. I'm trying to remember what movie it was.
It's Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, he's like, "Nobody remembers me in this." And this is like, "Hey, good job fucking the pie fucker," whatever. But I like how they broke the fourth wall on that and kind of, but I think those and Nadia with the, or Shannon Elizabeth with the infamous webcam scene that we'll talk about later.
We will.
I think those are probably the most three resonant characters.
They're always going to be associated with that because of the outrageousness of it.
Yeah. Precisely. Because and then I think Eugene Levy would probably be next on the list just because he's his awkwardness and the way that him and Jim work together and the way they, you know, failed together.
he ironically typecasts himself in this movie. Does that make sense? I mean, yeah. Because he couldn't do anything else other than the awkward guy. I mean, even in any other movie that he's been in, he's always been the awkward guy.
Yeah, like Saving Silverman.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think he did kind of, too. Same thing with Sean William Scott, you know.
And Jennifer Coolidge.
Yeah, they just have the American Pie stink on them. Like, they're never going to get it off of them.
She's always going to be Stifler's mom.
Yeah, I mean, I swear Jason Biggs' tomb is or gravestone's going to say pie fucker. I swear it. He's never going to live that down.
He's not going to live it down, and he went for it.
He's going to be carrying
it. He went for it.
He did. He's going to be wearing a cross, like carrying a cross with that on it or something. Man. I swear, dude. Like, that's never going to die, ever. But great cameos in this movie as well, though. That's another thing I loved about it.
Say a prayer for Travis Barker, who didn't get credit in this movie.
That was weird. I wondered about that.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Blink 182 had a band member change during the recording of this movie. So like they did an album, I don't know which album it was, and then they did Enemy of the State with Travis Barker as the drummer, and they used Travis with the cameo that they did, but they credited Scott Rayner, who was the drummer that they just got rid of. So poor Travis, he didn't get any residuals or nothing, man.
Scott Rayner was on the first two albums. First one was Cheshire Cat, second one was Dude Ranch, and then he left. Well, that's a whole nother story. Actually, we talked all about that in season one of the Because Maybe Pod. So
yep,
you can always go back and listen to that.
Episode 11. Go ahead and check it out. It's
we worshiped Travis Barker for a few minutes on there too.
That's that right.
It's amazing. Best drummer, man.
Best drummer since Phil Connors.
In Punxsutawney.
There you go. Also, Affleck's brother was in this one.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was Casey Affleck until a couple of years later. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Until I didn't really either.
He did that movie. The death of what was it called? The death of anyway, it's a long title. It tells you exactly what happens in the movie.
Okay.
I think it's the death of Jesse James by the coward, and I can't remember the character. Anyway, so I didn't realize it was Affleck's brother. And then you had, of course, John Chow playing the MILF guy.
Yeah.
Yes, you see, look, you see why we can go PG on this one.
Yeah, right.
So American Pie, great institution, great movie. What happened? Well, we've got three pages of plot notes, people. So this could take a while. All right. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna go through it, and then we're gonna talk. We're gonna go through a paragraph, and then we're gonna talk about what happened in that paragraph. That's probably the quickest way to do it. But American Pie is set in 1999, which is also the year it was filmed. Focus on a group of close friends in their senior year of fictional East Great East Great Falls High School in West Michigan. Kevin Myers, Chris Ostreicher, Jim Levinson, and Paul Finch, who is only known by his surname. How many people do you know who when you hear their real name, you think, oh my God, is that your name? Because if somebody said, hey, Paul, what's going on? I'm like, what the heck? Because Finch, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, nicknames and using surnames instead or middle names, that's just, it's always just preference. I mean, you never know. Yeah. But I think Finch is a cool monitor, moniker. I just always feel like I'm on a football team if somebody calls me by my last name. Yeah. So that's, I just get a football vibe or a sports vibe rather. So
yeah, it's, I always feel like I'm being interrogated when somebody just calls me Conway. It's like, ooh.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So Kevin is confident, charming, and dating long-term girlfriend Vicky. Oz is a laid-back member of the school lacrosse team. Jim is socially awkward, sexually naive, and suffers from pressure and questionable advice from his father. While Finch is a cappuccino-drinking sophisticate who plays golf and wears sports jackets. The four have very different personalities but share a common characteristic. They are all virgins. They're in sharp contrast to popular lacrosse player and arrogant jock Steve Stifler, whose wild, extravagant house parties they regularly are invited to. I don't recall Finch wearing a sports jacket.
Yeah, I don't.
I get the person who wrote this is go the vibe that they're going for, but I don't pick. I can't remember him with a sports jacket on.
Yeah, I didn't get a jock vibe from him at all. I mean, Stifler and Oz got that going for him.
But like,
yeah. So they're definitely the jocks of the group.
I play golf and wear sports jacket and drink cappuccino. Stud right nice. There.
Definitely so, not a virgin.
No. Or maybe. But anyway. While at one of Stifler's parties, the four each attempt to score with various girls at the party with limited success. Oz is humiliated by an older girl. What did he say? He said, blow me beautiful or something like that.
Yeah. Suck me beautiful or something.
Suck me beautiful. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, it didn't go very well for him.
No, he got laughed out of the vehicle. Finch is too late to the party. Jim attempts to talk to Czechoslovakian exchange student Nadia, but fails completely. Kevin receives oral sex from Vicky, but overhears her complaining to Jim and promptly dumps him on the spot.
Wow.
Which, dude, you don't like bite the hand that feeds you, you know. You don't complain. That's how nothing happens ever again.
I mean, did she like grab a cheese grater? I mean, like, how do you mess that up? Like,
man, Tara Reid only blew me at this party. Okay,
right. Yeah, but I'd also just like to say, what do you call the worst blowjob you've ever had?
Go on.
Fantastic.
It's exactly.
Stop being, man, come on.
Stop complaining.
Stop being so critical.
The next morning, the four wake up hungover and depressed to find the ultra nerd Chuck Sherman, a.k.a. the Shermanator.
The Shermanator. I almost forgot about him.
Oh, you can't forget the Shermanator.
No, yeah, I mean, totally.
He lost his virginity that night. Kevin decides to take a stand and defiantly declares that the four will make a pact to lose their virginity before school prom and graduation. A little too plot-wise, that's just a little too corny. We got prom coming up. We have to get laid.
Yeah, I mean, it's cliche. And that was my exact feeling when I was rewatching. I was like, yeah, it's, I mean, now as a 30-something man, you know, this was when this came out, I was 16 years old, 15 years old. So this was, for the sake of argument, targeted for me.
Yeah.
You know, they were aiming it at people our age, roughly. So yeah, that now it was really hilarious and over the top and entertaining. But now I'm just like, God, it's just so cool. There's just some parts of it that are just so unbelievable and corny. And felonious, like there's some stuff in there now that's like a felony, like it wasn't a thing back then.
No, we didn't have word for it back then.
Exactly.
Now we've got it, you know, and then we realize what it is. It's like, oh shit.
We realize how sleazy and how, what an invasion of privacy and other things that some of these things are.
No, it's you're right. I mean, not only is it sleazy and you know, it's the best way to say this. Not, you know, it's wrong is too much of an understatement. Not only did we not realize, everybody who watched the movie originally during its original run and, like, you know, within the 4 or 5 years afterwards and everything like that, they accepted it for what it was and didn't bat an eyelid over it. Maybe a couple of ohs, you know, but I mean, we're talking men and women, you know, it's not just a guy thing, you know. I mean, we'll get to that bit here in a minute because we're almost there. So what happens after Kevin got dumped, which he rightfully should have, you know, because you don't claim in a crowded party that you're sick and tired of not getting laid. He sets out to win Vicky back, but he must work hard to get a chance with her and begins to seek advice from others, including Vicky's best friend, Jessica, who reveals to Kevin that despite thinking otherwise, Vicky has never had an orgasm from Kevin and that he must work on everything else. So he goes to his older brother, Tom, who passes to Kevin one of the secret Great Bible, the manual of love and sex compiled by various East Great Falls students over several decades. Both Jessica and Tom divulge their advice only after Kevin stresses he wants to make Vicky happy rather than simply take advantage of her for her pact. Aww. This is nice. That's so sweet. Aww. Kevin finally sees a chance to make things up with Vicky when he performs oral sex in the bedroom using his new techniques. Vicky experiences an intense orgasm, is driven wild by Kevin, winning him promise of sex at the prom and the after party at the process. So he understood the assignment.
He followed through.
And see, that's the thing, right? Looking back over it, right? That scene in particular, right, has always bugged me for several reasons. But I think the main reason is that you don't go over to the girl's house to do stuff like that, because the dad could walk in at any second. Yeah. And dads will kill anybody who's touching their daughter, folks.
Yeah, especially... I've been chased out of a couple of houses before in my teenage days. Yeah.
You don't want to get chased out of the house.
Guns don't kill dads who come home early from work, do.
That's right. And Victor's dad came home very early.
Yeah.
So... Meanwhile, Oz joins the school and put the mic in front of me. Meanwhile, Oz joins the school jazz choir in an effort to lose his stereotypical meathead lacrosse jock persona and hopes to find a girlfriend there. He's mocked at first, but he soon wins over the attention of Heather, one of the choir singers, who also suffers from being stereotyped as prissy. She swiftly asks him out to the prom with her, but changes her mind upon seeing Stifler and his friends mocking her, assuming Oz was doing the same. Oz volunteers to become lead vocalist alongside Heather, try and regain her trust. He succeeds when she catches him tirelessly rehearsing alone in the theater and pays him a visit after hours at the sandwich bar, and they reconcile. However, their relationship is dealt a blow when Oz realizes the last ever lacrosse game he's going to have clashes with the choir competition. But he abandons the game halfway through, rushes over to the music hall, and makes it just in time to perform the duet to a rapturous applause. Now, that's like going over several different scenes at once. It doesn't happen in, like, you know, in a 20-minute period. That's, you know, spread out over the whole movie. But that's kind of sweet. It's kind of wholesome in this movie's.
There are some elements that are classic and wholesome. I'll give you that. Yeah, but
I mean,
he's about to fuck a pie though, so a lot of that's
I mean, well, when you think about it, right? Well, see, this is the thing about Oz, right? He does have the best arc out of all the characters. Because he goes from not dumb jock, but he goes from meathead jock to caring, sensitive dude in the space of the movie.
He grows a little bit. I don't know. He probably grows emotionally the most out of everybody, I'd say.
Yeah, because the rest of them are emotionally stunted, even for teenage boys in the mid-90s.
Fairly static. Yeah.
So here we come to the moment of the movie. The moment that made the movie. So, why? That's the only question I have to ask. Why? Why did we have to see this in the movie? Why couldn't, you know? Why couldn't they Father Ted it?
I don't know, man.
For those of you,
for those of you
wonder what Father Ted is, right? But what Father Ted it means is that comedy Father Ted, they'd set up a joke and they'd show you the aftermath of a situation. Kind of like, you know, how Family Guy sets up, hey, remember that time when we did the, and then all of a sudden it'll take you to a flashback or something, right? But the difference being, is they won't show you what happened. They'll just show you the aftermath, right? So in Father Ted, for example, there was an episode where one of the priests did a funeral. And he wasn't supposed to do a funeral because the last funeral did ended up a disaster. And it cuts to the funeral site where the hearse is on fire. There's two ambulances out there and everybody's like just standing there shaking. And the priest going, yeah, I don't know how that happened either. And you don't see what happens. You just see the aftermath, which makes it funny. Why couldn't we do that with the pie? Why couldn't we just see him putting his fingers in there? Then next thing you know,
you just see a hole in it.
Yeah.
And
him pulling his pants up or something like that, you know?
And then he's just like pie filling like on him, like around his pants. Yeah, I guess, I don't know. They were just going for it.
He went for it too. I got to give Jason Biggs a little bit of method credit for that one because he went for that.
He really actually did it.
I don't think he went all the way, but like the acting portion of it. He gave it his all, or as much as he could give it. Maybe not the best choice of words, but so what are we talking about? Well,
those director notes could get really weird real quick.
Yeah,
it's like, come on, man, you gotta get it up. Come on, get it up. Buy more. Come on, good job, man. Really give it to it.
Good job, you were a method actor. I mean, can you imagine that? What is my motivation for fucking this pie? Because it's funny, just do it, you know.
not getting the filling in my urethra.
Oh, but hopefully it's not nair. Oz describes third base to Jim as warm apple pie. So a curious Jim temporarily loses his sanity, no shit, and has full sex with a freshly baked apple pie left on the table by his mother, giving the film the title. How did he burn himself?
And how was he going to explain that? He didn't get rid of it. I mean, any sane person would have immediately destroyed the evidence. Immediately.
Well, if he hadn't got caught. Because that was the thing, he got caught by his dad.
Good point. No, I would just spun it so it all would have... Like, oh, what happened? Aliens. Oh, good night.
Yeah. Why are you pants down? Oh, we forgot the first thing we forgot about was the illegal channels line.
It's the new rap gangster rapper look. Yeah, just take your pants off. You know, it was in the 80s it was hammer pants, in the 90s, you know, early 90s was low. And now I was just totally take your pants off. That's the new thing, Dad.
God. I mean, I'm just imagining because I've got two boys.
Oh, man.
I've got two boys who were getting to that age, and I'm just imagining what would happen if I walked in on that. What would I say or do? Because I would just, aside from laughing and picking myself up off the floor, I have no idea what I would say or do.
Yeah, I might try to just creep out of there unnoticed. Like, I did not see that. I'm going to go pour bleach in my eyeballs.
Pick up the phone. Hey, Sarah, guess what? You will not believe what I just saw.
Hey, I've walked into somebody masturbating in my sound booth before.
Nice.
At a venue I was working at.
I know some of the venues that you work at too, and some of them are more wholesome than others. Let's hope it wasn't one of the more wholesome venues.
No, this was a good 8 or 9 years ago or more in a venue that's not even open anymore.
Oh.
But yeah, why? I saw there was people having sex in the bathroom there one time too. I've seen all kinds of. It was a bar in downtown Shreveport, and that's all you know.
There you go.
So,
well, almost without hope, Jim has a stroke of fortune. Now, this is the other thing that we're going to talk about too. He has a stroke of fortune when Nadia, suddenly at random asks if she can come around his house to study with him. And this isn't a wink or a nod study either. This is actual, let's hang out and hit the books together.
Right.
But she drops the crucial detail that she'll be coming straight after ballet practice and need to change clothes. Stifler, being the jerk that he is, proceeds Jim to set up a webcam in the room so they can all watch Nettie stripping together over the internet. Upon Nettie's arrival, Jim sets up the webcam and dashes across the street to John, Kevin, and Finch at Kevin's house. Against expectation, an almost naked Nettie discovers Jim's porno stash and begins to masturbate on his bed, causing a riotous reaction from Stifler, Kevin, and Finch on the other end, as well as Stifler's younger brother, Matt. Now, this is the thing that the other thing that we wanted to talk about, why we couldn't keep it PG. For a start, as a guy, as somebody who has a crush, he hit the jackpot when she found it, when she found his collection and didn't freak out and started going ham. Hey, well done. Yeah. It's just the fact that he's broadcasting this to the world. That's the downside of of this.
The invasion. This is an invasion of privacy.
Yeah, this is.
And
this
also, is she an adult?
No,
because that raises another issue. So you're talking about felony into at least two felony counts right there, and then for all of them too.
For all of them, and
yep.
it's revenge porn.
Yep.
It's potential child porn. Yep. It's wow. You know, that
looking it through the lens. And when I was a kid, I was like, oh man, oh dude, it's so lucky. Oh, now I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like that's so problematic in so many ways.
It's,
I mean, not just the legal, but like the moral. Ethical and moral. Like it's like bang, 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 bang. It's like red flags. It's like bloop, 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 like everywhere now. It's,
and like I said, up until about 2005, everybody who watched this movie kind of gave it a pass. It's only when, like, you know, the internet started getting real, real big. I mean, the internet was big and blah, 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 but it's only when everybody started getting online, just before everybody started getting cell phones.
But it became a utility, basically.
Yeah.
Once it was a luxury for a while, and now it's a utility.
Yeah.
The pandemic has proven that.
Yeah. And now, you know, for the last 14 years, people are watching this movie going, oh my God.
It ages like eggs, man. I mean, there's some good parts about it. I like it's a perfect snapshot of fashion, of music, of the general theme and kind of culture of the 90s. But this scene is just incredibly just Tone egregiously. I mean, and I think they address the part about her age because they're all supposed to be seniors.
Yeah.
But not everybody's a senior. I wasn't a senior until February. Of the year I graduated.
Now,
you know, I wasn't 18, an adult until that. Yeah. So
I don't know how school
is sketchy.
It's sketchy. I don't know how school ages work over here. Not making excuses, no. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know how school ages work over here in the sense that back home, it's September 1st to August 31st is the age range. So yeah. September 1st, year one to August 31st, year two. So if it's the same, and you guys, she had to have been 18 before May of 1999.
Right.
For this to be, I don't want to say okay, but for this to be at least not as desperately horrible as it could be.
So, and she was of legal age at the time of shooting. Obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
But anyways, so I guess it's not the literal sense of it, but I think the spirit of it,
yeah,
the spirit of it is kind of sketchy in that sense.
It's
like, it's like she should have held up, like, you know, hold up two forms. I am 18. No, but you know, what I'm saying? Like,
it's
there's just so much surrounding that. That's just, it's, I just feel sleazy now. Thinking about it. And that is,
And I don't want to say, oh, we didn't know any better, because probably we deep down we knew better.
They were trying to be edgy.
We knew that. We were dumb kids when we were watching it. This wasn't something that came out in the movies 2 weeks ago that we're now commentating on. This is a 22-year-old movie whose morals and values were of the time, and everybody agreed to it. Everybody agreed to the actors wise, studio wise, directors wise, you know, the whole, everybody agreed to do it.
Sure.
And he, and Shannon Elizabeth had to agree to get naked on camera.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I'm not saying anybody didn't have any problems with it or not. They probably did have the problems, probably had the same conversations that we're having right now, probably.
But it just be, it would be a different story today if this were an, as something that happened.
But it gets worse.
It does.
Because instead of it going to just him and his buddies, he accidentally hooked up the whole school directory.
So everybody's watching it. And I just love the part where he's like, dude, there's a naked girl in your room right now. What are you doing over here? So it's kind of relatable, you know, in the early years, you know, when you're figuring out sexual experiences and that kind of thing, trying to navigate that minefield.
But you know what? For him, it works because he runs back to the bedroom and she's ready to go.
Boom. Yeah, it did the trick, man.
And he's a little too eager twice. He Forrest Gumped twice.
Twice, man. he barely had time to reload. How did he, was he able to fire two off, man? Jeez.
Yeah.
Poor guy, man. But, and that was too much for her.
And she upped and left and didn't.
That was exactly, that was her ceiling. Yeah. Not the porn. Not the video camera, but the double premature jack. Boom! I'm done.
Done. And unfortunately for the character was out of there because Nadia was a Czechoslovakian exchange student. Now, pedantic alert right here. There was no such country as Czechoslovakia in 1999. It was the Czech Republic at that point.
Because I know it was Czech and then Slovakia. While. Like it was two, it was like two separate ones.
And then Slovakia became a whole bunch of other. Yeah. So basically, again, pedantic alert. It's like saying Yugoslavia didn't exist at this time. But that's my European. See, everything in this movie so far, I've become the most irritated of the Czechoslovakia thing.
Right. That's fair.
Well, it's you know, going back to the morals thing, right? It's very, very hard to change, you know, opinions and thoughts on things. Because, like, I haven't seen this movie in 15 years. I know a lot of this from memory. I watched this movie so many times.
Yeah, you know? Oh, totally.
And looking back, I didn't think anything was wrong. Now I know stuff is wrong. I'm trying to justify the wrong stuff when I shouldn't be. You know,
yeah,
I should be equally condemning it. Anyway, Nadia has been sent back to Czechoslovakia. Jim is the laughing stock of the high school. Oh, and so he's just zoned out, not paying any attention. Where he meets Michelle, who just randomly starts rabbiting in his ear, just da 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 da. And this one time at band camp, we did this, and one time we did that, and. He's like, you don't know who I am? She goes, no. It's like, would you like to go to prom? And she goes, okay. And he's got him his date. So then we go to Finch. And this bothers me more than a lot of the other stuff. Because I don't know what the term is that we would use, but he basically builds himself up as this international man of mystery. And
yeah, little bit of deception there, a little bit of, yeah, I don't know exactly what you, it's not genuine. I mean, cause some of the stuff that he spreads is not true. And like some of them, like if you're going to tell people that you're packing heat,
you better be packing heat.
Cause, there's people that would be like, all right, let's see it. Whip it out. You know?
That's right.
You better have that check ready if you're going to try. They're going to try cash it.
If what you think is packing heat might be, you know, pea shooting someone else.
That is very true as well. But
what Finch does is that he starts spreading rumors about himself through Jessica. He gives her $200 just to start, you know, just start spreading one or two words around, and then word got around and around and around and around and around. And this pisses Stifler off because, well, one of the girls he wanted to ask out to prom turned him down because she wanted a chance with Finch. So what he did was he put laxatives in his coffee, directed him to a girl's bathroom, and humiliated him.
Wow.
And there went his $200 and his mystique.
Jeez. Oh, I figured out, just to go back really quick, the thing about you said about sports jackets.
Yeah.
Finch always wore sport coats.
Sport coat?
The coat, okay. You know, like with the little patch on the...
Yeah.
Like that. So I think that's... Okay. They may have just fucked that up. I don't know. But I think just... I was picturing that scene, picturing him. Yeah, totally a sport coat guy.
So. Okay, I got you. I got you. Just for the record, I stole this plot from somewhere. So yeah, if there's anything wrong with the plot, please don't complain at me. I don't remember where I got it from. It's been months. Oh goodness me. All right, so prom has finally come around. And Finch is the only one who attends alone. But Jessica gives him a hip flask because why not? I mean, that's the last thing you can do. I just took all your money. Here's a hip flask.
Right.
Yeah. I've lost where I am. The prom itself is cheap, tacky, and uneventful and derided by most of the students. Well, no shit. It's a senior prom.
Yeah, I mean, it's your stereotypical kind of thing. Yeah.
Kevin comes out bragging and wants to know if it's a good time for a status check on their pact. Oz and Finch don't care. They're like, you know, it's done. It's over with, whatever. We don't care about this anymore. Partly because one's growing as maturely and the other one can't get laid anymore. And then Jim just unleashes. I mean, he's had the pie. He's had the humiliation of being on camera.
Oh, yeah. He's had the worst of it from everybody, out of everybody, really.
He's like, you know what? Screw this. Sex isn't all as important as made out to be. And Kevin's bravado kind of goes... He has the smallest arc, in my opinion.
Because yeah.
He goes from confident swagger to gibbering nervous wreck in the space of a friend's tongue lashing.
Right, yeah. See, built, what does it say? A house built on
sand.
Sand, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
His house was built on sand.
Yes. That's, and I know this because of The Simpsons. That's Matthew 7:26, everybody. Get your Bible verses in.
The Simpsons, man.
It's sad that I only remember Bible verses because of The Simpsons. I'll let you use a Catholic education. But what happens is everybody's mood becomes lifted, you know, very, very quickly when Chuck Sherman goes up to announce that Shermanator is still a virgin. He did not lose his V card at the party a couple of weeks back, and he still pisses his pants, which causes him to, right on cue, piss his pants. Like I said, I'm not doing this movie any justice by reading out this plot because I'm making it sound like the worst of the worst of it's actually quite funny and charming in parts.
No, so, I mean, there's other things that make it funny too. There's expressions, there's camera angles, there's gags. So yeah, I mean,
it's a comedy.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So it's multi-layered. There's three or four elements going on at once that make that comedy happen.
It's just unfortunate that the layers that we have to talk about, the ones that drive the plot along, sometimes are a little squiggy. So Shermanator pees himself. The boys get on a bus to Stifler's mansion and go for a party. And as the party gets traction, all four boys fulfill their pact without any effort. I disagree with that line. One of them had to have a bunch of effort, which we'll get to here in a minute, which is the other squiggy part of the movie. First of all, Kevin and Vicky go upstairs to a bedroom where they finally get it on. But however they want it to become perfect and awesome, and it's rigid and awkward and painful and doesn't really go the way it, you know, needs to be. Oz confesses to Heather about the pact, but he renounces the pact and declares that he's already won just by being with her at the prom. Aww.
Oh. See, they had to balance out all the weird, cringy shit with some good wholesome moments here and there.
Was it Jim snoozing through Michelle's immature Bandcamp stories, but then chokes on his drink, which she revolves she knows more about sex than he does. They head off to, they head off to a bedroom and they handle up on their business. And the only reason she went with prom because she knew that he was a sure thing. So she knew who he was, and she actually did. Was it reverse Uno card?
Reverse psychology. Then I mean, but the thing, the joke's on her though, because most guys at that age are shifting. Unless they're, you know, deeply religious or saving themselves for marriage or something. But yeah, I mean, I think women have it a little bit easier in that regard. But that's just my opinion.
And then we have the one of the next squiggiest parts of the movie. Now, we mentioned earlier when we were talking about the cast list that there were two guys called the MILF guys.
Yeah.
They were two guys who basically was worshipping a picture of Stifler's mom, yelling the word MILF at her. And the term MILF means mom I'd love to fuck, right?
Right.
For those who don't know.
Yeah, which is no one.
No one. Especially if you listen to this. Especially if you listen to this, you know what that is. Oil.
Yep.
Finch wanders around the house, bumps into Stifler's mom, and engages in witty repartee and flirtations, and they end up banging on the pool table.
Another possibly questionable
age.
Possibly felonious act, man. I mean,
how do you explain to your son that you bedded one of his friends when you both were in high school?
How do you tell your friend that you banged his mom, and be like with a straight face, not like a laugh, and like that, I got you.
Yeah, and be actual. No, dude, I did.
I couldn't do that. Yeah, no.
Very very squiggy, very very squiggy. So dawn breaks early morning at the Stifler Mansion, which is littered with sleeping teenagers. Oz and Heather watch the sunrise together. The couple looking extremely happy. Excuse me. Kevin and Vicky are also awake, but are both contemplative and neither seem happy. Good. Kevin deserves not to be happy. It's because of him. It's because of him we got all this stuff. See, I never liked the character. Never did. I always thought that he was not a bully, but he was very, very pushy.
Yeah.
And
a little controlling, a little pushy. Yeah.
Spoiled. His brother is like a fair few years older than him. So he's kind of like that era where he's an only child, even though he has an older brother, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they're far enough apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Kevin and Vicky break up because they didn't want to do long distance. Jim wakes up, goes to snuggle, and realizes that he's only there with himself. He also realized that he was used and abused, and he is okay with that. He actually thinks it's quite awesome.
It's an experience, I guess. Yeah.
And Stifler walks in and finds his mama on the pool table with one of the guys he absolutely hates.
Ugh.
Ugh. And passes out.
It's so gross, man. So gross.
The film ends with the four guys proclaiming the next step as in going to college, and it actually ends with Jim setting up his webcam, strip-teasing and dancing to country music with Nadia on the other end, applauding and cheering for him in Czechoslovakia. That right there is a good return gag. You know, it's a good
fair play
callback. You know, tip of the hat.
But did he broadcast it to the entire school?
No, he didn't. That's
the part. Did he start masturbating?
I hope not.
And then it happened against his will.
See,
without his knowledge.
No, that's the thing. That's why, like I said, that's why I've said
it's
before.
More of a nod than fair play. Yeah.
Yes. Not fair. Do I say fair play?
No, I said it. I said it, but I after analyzing it a little bit. Yeah, that was not the case.
No, I mean it's a good wink and a nod joke, ha 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 ha. But I mean,
there you go.
But I mean, good lord, there was a lot of ad-libbing in this movie, and I think more of it needed to happen. Because Alison Hannigan ad-libbed a lot of her lines. Eugene Levy ad-libbed pretty much all of his lines. You know, so Jim's dad and Michelle, you know, "Say My Name, Bitch," was one of the greatest movie quotes of all time, was ad-libbed completely on the spot.
Yeah.
They actually offered her all the female roles. After she got her pick. She got her pick. And
nice.
The reason they gave her, the reason they offered her Michelle was because when she did her audition, she was so nervous that she talked like this and hi, and which is the whole Michelle character off the bat straight away said, okay, yeah, we got to have you.
Kind of a little awkward, a little stumbly to kind of compliment Jim a little bit.
Yeah. Now, because this was 90s, it needed two females in there that didn't show up. One was Sarah Michelle Gellar, the other was Selma Blair. And Selma Blair was also offered the pick of any character that she wanted, and she said, fuck no.
Wow.
A decision that she says she regrets, but I don't think so. You know, and interesting fact is that Sean William Scott tried to learn how to play lacrosse and decided after 3 weeks, fuck this. I'm going to be able to play it.
Right.
So aside from the questionable plot, what was the most memorable thing about this movie was the music.
Oh yeah,
this has got one of the greatest soundtracks of the era.
Yeah, the list is just incredible. A lot of these are Holodeck songs too. Flagpole Sitta, Celebrity Skin, 1 Week, So We Try Them Live. We play Rockefeller Skank during breaks as well too. This other one, Simple Minds.
Yeah.
Don't You Forget About Me.
Yeah.
I've seen that song clear out an entire room before. Well, not me. Okay, I take that back. One of my bandmates was in a band, and they had a packed house, and the bass player leaned over. He's like, "Hey, man, we should do that Simple Minds tune. Drives the girls crazy, man. I'm telling you, we'll that tip jar get full." He was like, "All right. 2, 3, 4. He said they got about a minute in and that place was a ghost town. He's like, "Never play that song live." Yeah. Never did. But yeah, otherwise it's a beautiful soundtrack. I mean, it looks really, really good. And Mutt, especially, that's a great tune.
That fit the scene.
Great tune. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
As creepy and as goofy as that scene is, it fit it completely. And that's, I think, what made the movie good. And a lot of these things were overlooked is because it was shot well. The cast did have a great chemistry. The script was, for what it was, really good. Like, you didn't, you know, the dialogue wasn't midichlorians, Master Anakin. What are those? Ha ha ha. You know, it wasn't wooden. Everyone gave a good performance.
It was casual. It was like casual, not casual, but like, wasn't overdone.
No, it was realistic.
It was relatable and realistic. Yeah, totally.
But I can't give this movie anything more than a 6. I really can't.
A 6 out of 10?
If we were doing this the year it came out and you and I were talking about it in the movie theaters,
I'd give it maybe 8.
8 or 9, yeah.
Yeah, but now I agree with you. I think a 5 or a 6 would be fun.
This movie aged like milk.
Yeah, really milk did. Pork directly in the sun. Yeah, it's problematic. It's got issues, some serious issues that would not, you wouldn't see these things presented in such a jocular manner.
No, I mean, we've got high school sex pacts, revenge,
which is probably the sex pact is probably the least of the worries.
True,
because guys don't
do kind of stuff like that.
Yeah, I would agree.
But then you got revenge porn, child revenge porn.
Yeah. Oh God.
Catfishing. Bullying, sexualization of teenagers, fetishization of older women, all the parties that they go to. The one thing they didn't have drugs. That's the only thing this movie didn't have. It didn't whip up the.
There was
no drugs.
No subtext whatsoever. Because sometimes, that 70s show.
Yeah.
Like, they never see them smoking, but they're sitting in a circle and they're all like,
yeah. And then it'll cut to someone else. Them. Yeah.
And they're just, oh, man.
Nothing like that.
But it's not like Dazed and Confused, where they were just openly toking throughout the entire thing.
But, in fact, you couldn't tell drugs existed in this world.
Pretty much. These were the preppy kids. Like when I went to school, high school, the preppy kids didn't do drugs. They drank.
Yeah.
You know, the stoners and all the other people were the ones that smoked the herb and did other crap like that.
This was the parties for the jock and the nerd crowd.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, they were going for a wide audience. And I think they hit almost every little, not every, but they hit some major, you know, swatches of types of people with the way they cast it and wrote everything.
Well, here's the other thing too, right? You know, this was the last of what they call the great teen comedies out there. And it was. Right. I mean, until Superbad came out, this was the last one. And I think Superbad kind of did it better. In my opinion, Superbad's a better movie.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as... I don't know. This movie took a little bit of graces here and there, and I guess they kind of did in Superbad too, but that's got kind of like a different feel. It's got a element of fantasy to it.
Yeah,
this one is grounded in absolute reality. So yeah, it takes more liberties than I guess it should with what it did, it being grounded in Earth type thing. But I mean, it's not too insane, but there's just some stuff in it that's just like, wow.
Yeah, you know, like, can't believe we got away with it. Can't believe we put that on film.
It was a good thing for a couple of people. I mean, a couple of people actually did go on to do a lot after this movie. So, I mean, it wasn't all in vain, I would suppose.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, this movie was part of the thing that spawned, you know, things like Scary Movie, you know, and the Not Another Teen Movie. And then those god-awful blank movies, you know, the ones like Date Movie and Meet the Spartans and all the ones that are just not funny. You know,
like Blair Witch Project. Yeah, it's totally not funny. I didn't laugh once.
No. Tony Blair Witch Project is a movie I want to see, and that is an actual movie.
Selma Blair Witch Project.
I think that was done in Cruel Intentions.
Man, don't get me started on that cast, man. That's the best looking cast ever lived, man.
That's the most beautiful cast I've ever seen, and it makes me sick that they were all right about my age when they did it, because I look like a potato.
I would kiss them all. I kiss every one of them.
Hey, no discrimination here.
just sexy.
Ryan Felipe, man. What a guy. But no, that's...
Yeah, right.
But that's American Pie, everybody. I recommend, if for nothing else, if you've never seen it, if you haven't seen it in years, go watch it again. And try not to... You know, try and watch it with an open mind and see if you can get through all the squiffy bits, because they are very, very squiffy.
Yeah, watch the cinematic release first.
Yes.
And then if you want to go deeper, there's an unrated version and also a director's cut. I'm not sure if they differ. I may maybe not remember that correctly, but I know the unrated one is longer, so there's probably some scenes that it was probably trimmed a little bit for theaters. But
that's what she said. And on that note,
that's what Pee Wee Herman said, trimming it for the theater. that joke just dated me. Okay.
It's okay. The fact that I laughed dated me also. Greg, man, it's been fantastic to have you on. It's good to be back. You're going to be on here next week, which we'll get to here in a few moments. But we will see you next week. And I'll be back here in a couple of minutes. Thanks, Greg, for coming on, man.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
My sincere thank you to Greg Gravy for joining us this week. I know it was a bit of a trouble getting together, but awesome to get together nonetheless. Next week's episode, Greg is going to be back as we talk about the Super Mario games of the 1990s. Yes, we've got a bunch of Mario games that we're going to talk about and explain why they were great and why they may not have been so great. So stay tuned for that. This week, the 90s Gamer continues its playthrough of Pokemon Blue. We've got a lot going on there. Oh, it's been a pain getting that one done, but you know, it's been a labor of love. That's what I love about it. So yeah, go check us out on Tuesday and Thursday over on our YouTube channel. That's where you find the 90s Gamer and our playthrough of Pokemon Blue. So that really is it for this week. I want to thank everybody who's listening right now and has had the patience with us. We've been off the air for over a year. That is because I've had some real bad issues in my mental health over the last year. Hopefully, I feel like I'm on the mend. I feel like I'm doing a lot better than I have in months. So why not launch something and do something that, you know, I enjoy and I love. So that's why we've taken a while back. There are some people who I want to talk to about this podcast I haven't had a chance to yet. And again, to do an explicit episode, very, very first episode, I know, but believe me, we couldn't do this justice without it being an explicit episode. So thank you for your patience in that one. And that's it for this episode. So if you like what you listen to, go to becausemedianetwork.com. That's where all of our archives are. That's where you listen to all of our previous episodes of the 90s podcast, watch the 90s Gamer, and any of our Dead Streamer and Right Here Right Now podcasts that we've got up there. You want to check out the latest news, check out our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages. Those are online. Those are updated with the latest news, what's going on with us. And of course, if you are listening to this podcast and it's not your podcast services of choice, go check out Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Podbean. That's where you'll find us, okay? That's where we're all over the web. So if this is not where you like to listen to it, go to one of those. We'll be there. Look up the 90s podcast or the Because Maybe Network, okay? And that is it. So thank you very much. It's good to be back, and we will see you next week, okay? Take it easy, everybody. Bye.
You know. Yeah, you do.
Your bank account has to end in zero, not begin with zero.